Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., and it's another Sunday night and another 8 p.m., so we're here. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you of the usual links to be aware of. Okay. If you can't reach us via the radio, you're out of earshot, and you want to contact us for whatever reason, email is probably the best route. Our email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, that would be for mailbag questions at a distance, or if you would like to discuss some topic or like to hear some topic discussed, or if you would like to share a technical puzzle. I always enjoy presenting technical puzzles for the audience and having them scratch their head and think about things and maybe reconsider things that they took for granted. So if you have a puzzle that's somewhat like that, please email it to me. Or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a video or YouTube or some news story about space or NASA-related news, you could also directly email him. He's at spacenetreport@gmail.com. Another link is my link page. It has a whole bunch of interesting YouTubes and science articles that I think people would enjoy. This particular week is a very nicely done Veritasium YouTube. Smart guy. He actually goes into the history of imaginary numbers, how they came about, and what they were used for in different stages. So if you're going to see a YouTube, that's a YouTube video to see. So that's available on my link page, which is roy.ac2gs.com. In addition, we have a chat room available. If you like chat rooms, you can either go to Limark's own page and find the link to the chat room, or you could just type into your browser an alias. Just type in chat.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the chat room. I stream the audio of this technical net, and I stream Glen Oaks repeater 24/7 as best I can. Occasionally, the computer's down for maintenance, but if you are out of radio distance and you have an internet provider, you just type into a browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has an excellent archive of Limark technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. They're available at his website, which is amateurradio.tv. He's had over a million visitors, so make it a million and one. It's an excellent source of information. I will drop and tell you what we have planned for tonight. Okay, we will, as per usual, take questions of a technical nature from the audience. I will write down their first name and their call sign, and we will try to get to their question in an orderly fashion. I would prefer if the people who are interested in amateur radio technology check in first so that we can do that first. But eventually, if we have free time, we'll open it for any science or medicine-related questions. We do not diagnose nor treat on the radio, but if you want to discuss broad topics of discussion, I'm more than willing to do so. Unfortunately, it would appear our EchoLink node is down tonight. I don't think the people who maintain it are available. I think I heard earlier on the repeater that he was planning to go someplace tonight. So I emailed him, but we may not have an EchoLink connection for this night. Anyway, as I said, we'll open it for general discussion. We may discuss some stories that I have on my Science Talk list on my link page, if we have time for it. Then around 10:15, Paul, WS2N, will do SpaceNet Report. That'll take us to about 11 p.m. when we will I will return and wish you all well and close the net for this week. So that's the plan if everything does what it's supposed to do tonight, which I hope it does. So with that in mind, if anyone out there has any questions of a technical nature and they would like to have it discussed, please hit that push-to-talk button. Give me your first name and your call sign.
OGB. You know me.
Enter GN. Inconvenient to your time, whenever you decide.
Craig, Wes, and Sam recognized. Welcome aboard. Anyone else want to put their name down for tonight? Any questions or topics that they'd like to discuss or have discussed?
D2 UDU supporting the net.
John, do you have a question tonight, or are you just supporting the net? Okay, very good. If you could possibly adjust your antenna or raise the gain, you're about 30-40% noise. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS. Name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone else has any questions they would like to ask tonight, please give us your first name and your call sign.
I'll just give my call and first name, WA2CDL, just to make an announcement.
Okay, Andrew, you want to make an announcement? You could make the announcement now.
Okay, yeah, I will say that Andy's Corner will be back as soon as I come out from under what all the craziness that's going on over here. But I won't be, I won't go into all the details, there's no reason to, but as soon as I get a little bit of time, I'm gathering up some interesting articles, and I think people would enjoy, you know, diving in again as far as a little bit of technology and what's going on. Because no matter how much we learn, we never learn enough. And even the stuff that I'm uncovering, it's still a mystery. In a way, as you understand. So with that, good seeing everybody today at the Hamfest. I was delighted to be there, and it was nice to have an indoor Hamfest for this club again. So we're getting back on track, which is a good thing. The turnout, in my opinion, was not as heavy as it has been in the past, but that's to be expected given what's going on. So we still have to keep our masks mandated as required, because this thing is not over, and it won't be over for a while, as Roy, you could probably talk about. And that's the way it is, but it was good to be there. And to help out and do what I needed to do. So, but I will be, you know, but as what's his name in the movie said, and I forget names because my memory is so bad. Who is the guy that said, I will be back? I could see his face, but I forgot his name. So you got to tell me. Back to you, Roy, WA2CDL. I'll just listen in.
Okay, very good, Andy. That was Arnold, good old Arnold Schwarzenegger. Used to use that line repeatedly through many, many movies. I'll be back. And many people do their Arnold impersonation using it. Well, it was good to see you there. I was there as well. I was a little disappointed. Some of the people I was looking forward to meeting weren't around. It was a kind of interesting, strange type of environment. Very few people wore any kind of ID. I had my ID card on me with my call sign and my name. Most people didn't. Most people, thankfully, were wearing masks. So you didn't quite know who was who, unless you heard their voice. I was talking to someone in the back of the room, and one of our listeners heard my mellifluous tones and recognized me for who I was. But it was kind of anonymous out there. So if I missed a lot of you people for the Ham Fest, because I didn't know you were there, I'm sorry. And hopefully one of the future ones we can actually meet. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, and I am looking forward to future Andy's Corner. I think we've all missed it, and we'd like to see it back when Andy has the opportunity to bring it back. So I look forward to that. So let's go on the list that we have already. Hopefully there will be other people later on who will enter their name as well, so it'll fill out the evening nicely. First on the list for tonight is Craig, KD2OGB. What's your question tonight, Craig?
KD2OGB. First things first, readable, yes or no?
Pretty readable, about 15-20% noise, but I can understand everything you're saying.
Just making sure. All right, so on my phone, I have the I have AOL as one of my apps. For some reason, as soon as I open up the app, that's when I start getting notifications, and I have the majority of them turned on. But whenever I send something to my email or just anybody sends anything, I don't get anything on my phone. Like, it'll go off a couple of times, but then eventually it just won't go off anymore. What's going on there?
Okay, that's an interesting thing. Something about the refresh of the client, I would assume. Have you tried the perpetual recommendation of everyone of deleting the app and then reinstalling it?
I've done a four-stop on it. I have done the uninstall and reinstall, and nothing. On my previous phone, it would go off pretty much almost every time, but now it's not.
Okay, I mean, basically, as far as I'm aware, that's all that you could really sort of do. It might be that they broke the app, that they put some code in that kind of is problematic with being alerted. I know that I have software applications that have erratic alert statuses. Sometimes I'm alerted to them, but a lot of times they come and go, and I can't find the clue that they were ever there. So if anyone else out there has any better ideas, again, the only thing that the average user can really do is reset things. Otherwise, it's kind of tends to be either a application fault or a server fault, neither of which you can unfortunately do much about. You can ask someone at AOL if there's anyone left about your problem and see if they have any suggestions themselves. AOL is kind of an oldie. I mean, some will say a goodie, but certainly an oldie. Have you ever considered just kind of upgrading to a Gmail account, something a little bit that's maintained a little bit better than AOL these days?
I have too many things on Gmail. I'd rather just stick with AOL. I've held it probably ever since I got my amateur radio license, so I think it's better, unlike the other one that my mom uses, where I get messages like every 3 minutes. I'd rather get stuff from something important that I would like, and not just random stuff.
Okay, I mean, it's not inherent in Gmail, as far as I can perceive. I have more than a few Gmail accounts. I use them for all kinds of things. And if you don't hand them out, usually you don't get a lot of spam. So I think perhaps your mother simply lists her email address at websites or for discounts or things, as many people do. And Once they get that the email address, they sell it to other people who sell it to other people who sell it to other people. So I understand. You prefer that particular mail server. So again, my best suggestion offhand would be to contact them and ask them if there's any perceived problem and if there's anything you can personally do to lessen the problem on your end.
Maybe I could go to the Play Store and see if it's maybe due for an update. For whatever reason, I choose not to update my app. Maybe a couple that kind of force me to upgrade them because it just keeps taking up storage on the internal, and that's why I have external. The more I update my apps, they gain and lose features without you even knowing that it happened. It's like your computer just always downloads stuff all the time without ever telling you, and these updates can often change settings behind your back. So I just choose not really to update the app. I mean, the computer itself I will, but I don't feel like updating most of the apps.
Okay, I mean, that's certainly your choice, and perhaps in the short term, that's a good idea, because sometimes programmers, in their zeal to add feature sets, will break things. So being the first guy on your block with the latest and greatest has its benefits and has its punishment. In the long run, though, I don't think that's a great idea, because eventually the server interaction with your old client is going to break. You know, it may not happen today or next week or next month, but eventually it will, because they will have phased out that version many, many moons ago. So it becomes increasingly more possible that, you know, rather than totally fail, it'll just kind of misfire, and this might be a demonstration of that. So, I would really, you know, if it means a lot to you to get the alerts and to maintain the AOL account, you might want to have to bite the bullet and update to the latest, greatest application version.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do. The last time I updated it was probably, like, what, 2 months ago? I mean, I usually don't auto-update apps either because it just takes a long time, and I used to usually do it over Wi-Fi, but now that I have unlimited data, I can really just do it anytime, but I'd rather just do it over Wi-Fi. So, yeah, I'm going to try to update this AOL, see what happens. If not, then I don't really know what to do. At least the good thing about AOL is I'll know when I get an AOL message, because all of my ringtones and text message alerts are completely independent alerts from different apps, as well as all the people that call me. You can laugh at me for this. Every one of my contacts is set to different ringtones. I have, like, so many custom ringtones, and that's the benefit of having Android.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a little bit more effort than most people will give. I mean, I've jury-rigged my desktop system that if a certain subset of people who email me, I get flashing lights and a banner on my – well, I get a flashing light that's not on my screen, and I get a banner on my screen. So I know that someone that I usually have conversations with over email just sent me something. So, you know, whatever works for you, if that's a thing that helps you, then so be it. Like I said, I have my own little strange setup for email and such. It's not personalized for each person, although the little banner that pops up tells me who it is and what the subject text is. But I'm all for alerts, as long as they don't kind of obscure the function of a computer. So I wish you good luck, Craig, with that. I think that's a wise move to try and upgrade to the latest greatest, because you never know what kind of tweaks they put into the server that might have broken your old client.
It's really better off to just try to update and see what happens. If it doesn't, hey, at least I tried something, but maybe sooner or later they might fix it. I mean, with the previous phone, it was always going off, but with the new phone, for some reason, it's not. Maybe it's itself and kind of mess with things a little bit. And for you to have something customized on your computer seems like somebody knows how to add custom things. Meanwhile, I am not jailbreaking my phone.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a time where jailbreaking was of interest to me. I kind of like to know how things work, and jailbreaking them kind of gives you a little bit more insight. I wasn't really a big fan of jailbreaking phones. I was, though, of jailbreaking Apple TVs. I used to regularly do that and put applications from third parties on, the video presentation software that's called Kodai these days, that went by another name back in the old days, was not available at the Apple store, so it was a way to get around it. But I've kind of given up those days. It was a little bit too much trouble every time they upgraded the firmware. You had to jailbreak it once again, or again, you didn't get the new features and such. So I wish you good luck. Just as a little afterthought, I kind of always download updated versions of my applications on Wi-Fi. I find it just kind of easier and more convenient to do it at home, either the beginning of the day or the end of the day, and get it over with, rather than have it kind of flash up in the middle of the day and use up cell minutes and such. So that's a good practice to get into the habit of doing. So once again, Craig, I wish you luck, and if you want to, you can come back and tell us if you were able to cure your problem that way.
I certainly will do that. As much as now getting all those customizable ringtones and messages on my phone, it's easy as just accessing the phone and just throwing it on the ringtones folder. It's not like you have to like try to search for it on an iPhone. It's easier to do it with Android. It's trickier to do it with Apple because you got to do it through like iTunes and it's harder. But it's possible to do it without even jailbreaking because people think that jailbreaking the phone is the only way to do all these crazy things. Well, number one, you risk breaking, which is worse. And two, bye-bye warranty.
Yeah, you kind of should know what you're doing before you do things that will void warranties. And it in the old days especially, it was far easier to brick devices. Back in the bad old days, before you were born, BIOS memories were easily corrupted and not very easily rewritten to. So you would sometimes have to pop a erasable read-only memory out of the motherboard and get a replacement part for it. Otherwise, you had a very expensive paperweight.
One thing I could see really beneficial in jailbreaking the phone is you could actually use custom designs for, like, your battery bar, which I know somebody that actually did once. Better to do it actually on a prepaid phone. And plus, you can literally make your phone so fast, and you can practically make your phone internationally unlocked, so you can install pretty much almost anything without paying anything.
Okay, like I said, back in the old days, it was probably much more useful to jailbreak. It's become increasingly kind of irrelevant. So for people out there who've never done it, you probably shouldn't get into it. So good luck, and we'll see how it works out.
Very good. My work here is now done. I'm actually going to go back to my computer now. So, that control is ATQGS. Until next time, KQHD.
Okay, very good. I've had a little bit of a problem with the stream, I think, so I reset it, rebooted it. Unfortunately, most of the people having problems won't be hearing me on the radio because they can't hear me on the radio, but hopefully they will try again and have some better success now. Just give me 1 second, and I will type that into the chat room, and then we will continue. Okay, typing skills could be a little bit better, but the job is done. Next on my list for amateur radio question, Sam, KD2NSJ, I assume you have an amateur radio question today.
No, it's KD2NSJ, but West came first. I mean, Wesley, so let him go. And I'll go after that, KD2NSJ.
Okay, that's very kind of you, Sam. Kind of Wesley, when he checked in, basically said he kind of left it up to me to position him as I wish. He's probably not going to be asking an amateur radio-related question. It's probably going to be more of a general science question. So all things being equal, unless Wesley has any problems, I'll ask Wesley. Can Sam go before you?
No, whatever you decide, Dr. Roy. Whatever you think it's right for the net.
Yeah, John, if anything, your signal is noisier right now. You're up to about 70% noise. So whatever you did to fix the noise, undo it and go in the opposite direction of wherever you're standing or sitting or the angle you're twirling the handy-talkie in. Anyway, back to you, Wesley. Is it an amateur radio question, or is it more of a general science question tonight?
It is general science question, and it's related to tapes and sponges. But I believe everybody would be very much interested with it.
Okay, it's just that last week we kind of got off on a tangent, and there was at least one person who I'm sure had an amateur radio question, but by the time we got around to him at 10:15, he was kind of tired from the day and the change in time from daylight savings and such, and I felt bad about that. So if you don't mind, we'll put you on hold for a little while. Sam's questions usually don't require a great deal amount of time to discuss, so it's not like we're going to find ourselves at 10:15. So we'll put you on hold for a little bit, Wesley, and Sam, if you'd like to ask your question.
Yep. Thanks, Wesley. Just real quick, I have a 10-meter on my 8900 Yasu. It's no sideband on this radio, okay? So who do I talk to on 10 meters? Does it have to be Simplex and somebody that's close? But there's no sideband.
Well, that's sort of a problem because of the transmissions that I particularly hear, and you got to keep in mind that I run a 10-meter sideband net, most of them are sideband. You might find someone doing FM someplace, but they're very few and they're very far between. If you really want to get into 10 meters, a single sideband would be a very beneficial option. Otherwise, I guess your only choice is to simply comb through the band. You go from one end to the other. Well, if you're going to do FM, just remember to stay in the phone band portion of 10 meters and just go back and forth, and hopefully if you hear something, respond. Almost all 10 meters is simplex. There are some people who have a repeater on 10 meters, but again, not many. So don't expect to find too much of that. So for the most part, it's kind of a simplex band. But if at some point in the future you can find yourself a relatively inexpensive used 10-meter radio that's capable of single sideband, you might want to consider purchasing it. So, you know, we'd love to have you on our little 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. So you're always welcome there.
I got a question, WHCDL.
Certainly, Andy.
It's a Sam. Which radio are you using on 10 meters that doesn't have sideband? What's the name of it?
Jesus, 8900R. No sideband. I even called the technician at them, and they said, no, it doesn't come with it. But when I bought it, I didn't know anything about ham, and I thought I was buying a good radio. I would have never bought it. But I called the company, so I just want to check with Roy. Because I tried to get him on Sunday morning. All I get is static, Andy. I could see the needles moving all the time on every channel, but no audio.
The 8900, that's a Mobile radio?
Yes.
How many bands is that? Is that a quad band radio?
You got it. 6 meter, 10 meter, 2, and 70.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just making a little gesture here because, yeah, it doesn't do sideband. That's the quad band radio. All right. Yeah, there is FM activity. There is a repeater that's local here in Queens that does have a 10-meter input. There aren't too many, as Roy said, just to let you know. I don't know how many people actually use this other repeater that's got a 10-meter input. And the spacing on 10 meters is 100 KC, by the way. That's set up as defined... As the spacing between the input of the repeater and the output, it's 100 KC difference. I forget the exact frequency that's being used to go into the repeater. But again, it's a repeater. It's not, you go in on 10 meters and you come out on the repeater frequency, which is on the UHF band. And vice versa, you go in on UHF, you come out on 10. But like you say, it doesn't do sideband. If you want to do DX, if you want to do some DXing on FM on 10 meters, you'll need a radio that does a sideband. Just let you know. I'm just confirming what you're saying.
NY2A.
Thank you, Roy, for your time. I did. I went to two repeaters. One at Queens College. One day I heard them talking, and then I never heard them no more. They have a club there on 10 meters. So you're right. I'd have to go on a repeater. But thank you very much. I'm sure I understand it now. And yes, I'm saving for a radio. I'm clear.
VFM.
Tony, you wanna add something to the mix?
Not me, Roy. I'm clear. Thank you. Wesley, thank you. And I'm listening.
NY2A.
Yes, NY2A. You have something to add.
Yeah, a few things. You might want to try the KQ2H. He has a 10-meter repeater up in the Catskills. You should have no problem reaching it. You do get a fair amount of DX activity. South American countries seem to like to call into that. And you're also going out on his 2-meter and his 440 and quite a few other repeaters. And then also in terms of the FT8900, Sam, You could, that radio's been discontinued. I actually own one myself, and it's got a lot of capabilities that's still quite in demand because you can do cross-band repeat on that, and it's actually one of the few full duplex radios around, so people who do satellite work, FM satellite work, are interested in it. So you could very easily probably get almost as much as you paid for it back and then put that towards another radio. So just those aspects and the KQ2H repeater would be interesting probably for you to use as well.
Wow, thank you very much. Thank you. One more time, what was the repeater name?
KQ2H. He's got quite a few repeaters up in the Catskills. Actually, you can hear some of his. I routinely get his 2-meter repeater from like 125 miles away down here in Ellendale down to here. But if you go on repeater book and just look up KQ2H, it'll have all the information that you need to program in.
Okay, I will do. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Roy.
You're welcome, Sam. Just for your edification, KQ2H is listed as its frequency is 29.620 megahertz. There are also two other New York State 10-meter repeaters out there, of questionable whether they're still operating. One is N2ACF in Orangetown. That's 29.640, and there's one from a gentleman who a lot of people here know, Howard, WB2HWW. The frequency that's given for his 10-meter repeater is 29.660. I don't know if these are active repeaters, but they're listed in the repeater directory.
And what to it?
Yes, Tony.
Yeah, Howie's repeater is intermittent. It's still there, and the N2ACF, anything that he's maintaining is good. He does pretty much everything for Rockland Repeater Association, and his equipment is top-notch. I just don't actually use that one much, but that works. I know that works.
WA2VFM.
Yes, VFM.
Good evening, everybody. I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just wondering if KA2UTF might be around, Gary. Apparently not. What is this bizarre sound that I hear now?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by the bizarre sound, other than the courtesy tones.
I've been on this frequency for 35 years, I never heard a courtesy tone.
Okay, the reason why this courtesy tone is different than the usual just quiet little beep is because we're usually linked to IRLP and Echolink during these technical nets. And so during the net time from about 8 o'clock until 11, they switch into net mode, and the courtesy tone expands accordingly.
I understand. There's a station, a very, very loud station. You are located in Ellaville, New York?
Are you alluding to Tony, NY2A?
Say again, please.
Are you alluding to Tony, who is just recently on the repeater, NY2A? I don't know who you're quite talking about.
I am alluding, that's correct.
Okay, Tony, if you're out there, if you want to respond to WB2VFM.
No, I think he was referring to the fact that I mentioned that KQ2H's 2-meter repeater in Ellendale is routinely easily accessed from anywhere in Long Island or Queens.
Okay, let me grab it a second. Hold on, guys. Okay, the call is WA2. Thank you for making me younger, not WB2. Yes, thank you, station, for explaining. I misunderstood. I heard Ellenville, and you have a tremendous signal, the N2 station. But okay, Gary's not on frequency, so I'd like to give it back to you, gentlemen. Have a very pleasant evening, everybody. I don't know who gets it, but this is WA2 VFM.
Okay, very good. This is the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. I am AC2GS, the net control operator. My first name is Roy. So I hope you find your friend out there. Sam, we gave you as best we could. Again, my best advice, and you know, I don't want you to spend any more money than you have to, but if you're really interested in contacting more people on 10 meters, especially as propagation conditions improve, you'll probably bump into a heck of a lot more people on the single sideband portion than on FM. So if you come across an inexpensive used 10-meter capable of single sideband, preferably not one that started off as a CB radio and someone tweaked the resonance settings and you know, kind of refashioned it into something, then you should consider it. So I wish you luck, Sam, and I hope to hear you someday on my little 10-meter net. Unfortunately, local contacts are kind of iffy in places for some odd reason. We had a heck of a time trying to contact anyone across the Queens-Nassau border. We had one gentleman who was able to contact us consistently on Fire Island. Otherwise, you know, once you pass the border, it's very difficult, apparently, to hear a ground propagation. Something's getting in the way. But I wish you luck, Sam.
Okay, thank you very much, Roy. I'm clear.
Okay, John, KD2VHD, did you clear up your radio signal? Have you been able to tweak a little bit more wattage into it or something?
This is Jim, KD2VHD on my mobile now. Any better?
Yeah, sorry, Jim. Yeah, you sound much better this way.
I think my garage unit took a dump. So, good evening to all.
Okay, Jim, do you have any questions tonight or just here to say hello?
Well, hello to all. Good to speak to you this evening, this afternoon at the Limark event. Very nice. So I want to throw out there the thought that I love ham radio. Once upon a time, I loved CB. And somewhere in the middle, there's a thing I'd like to discuss about community. You mentioned the word, what was it? What was the word you mentioned?
Party line.
Party line, exactly. Valid, invalid, silly, stupid, good, I don't know. I just want to throw out there a discussion.
Okay, I met Jim at this morning's Hamfest. We had an interesting conversation. He was talking about the future of Citizens Band and bringing FM modulation to it and what effect it might have. And he was also interested in the possibility that the FCC could figure out something that might operate as a local party line, something that's a local transmission that doesn't require repeaters for more distant communications, but probably something that could be individual radios kept at 1 or 2 mile distances for very local situations, local emergencies and such. You know, I mentioned that there's a lot of apps that kind of do that, and he pointed out that it's possible that there will be a time when cell towers kind of malfunction. And so if it was based in individual handy-talkies, it would take that possible failure out of the chain. So anyone out there with any thoughts or ideas about some kind of similar type of non-repeater-based setup? I realize there's GMRS and there's other family-based transmission modes out there.
Hello, Charlie 2, Foxtrot Alpha. I do have an antenna question that helps the net. But who doesn't need knowledge?
Okay, we'll put you on the list, and you'll go. We go in order. What's your first name, sir?
Actually, I have to say it phonetically, because I forget. The first name is Charlie.
Okay, very good, Charlie. Okay, so we put you on the list, and we go down the list as best we can. I just want to find out if anyone has any thoughts on Jim's concerns, ideas about some kind of very low-range local communication system for neighborhood communications. I mentioned Party Line when I was talking to him earlier because thankfully none of us are quite that old. But there was a time when there were trunks of communication that you had to share with other people. There weren't individual phone lines, and so you were on a party line. So if another person who was sharing your line was in the middle of a conversation, you got to overhear everything that they said. So that's where I got party line from. But if anyone out there knows of any technology that's being considered, please hit that push-to-talk button.
WB2KW3.
Yes, Ken.
Okay, good evening, Roy. I'm wondering about the possibility of using a bunch of voice over IP phones and basically doing that over a mesh network at 2.4 or 5 gig or, you know, one of those ISM bands.
Well, that certainly would be an option. I could perceive a number of failure points to something like that. Usually, in my experience, mesh networks, and I could be totally wrong, are not really kind of designed for disaster. It's kind of iffy if they're on emergency power, so any kind of local power outage and they'd be gone. They tend not to be battery-based from what I know. And they're very difficult to kind of maintain a mesh. If you have a bunch of people in a nearby area, as I mentioned, with amateur radio licenses for the most part, I would think, although you could probably set up a similar type of mesh network if you go on the open frequencies, I would assume. But the mesh networks that we're talking about mostly are based on the amateur radio frequencies and require a relatively dense group of Wi-Fi-like routers that have their firmware changed to some third-party design. It certainly is a possibility, and I've heard people mention it as a kind of secondary internet for local communications. I think, though, it wouldn't be easy to get non-technical people up into that type of technology quickly. It's still somewhat experimental, great for tinkerers like us hams, but I don't know if the average person would be able to figure out how to kind of set up the routers and such and arrange the different high-gain antennas from node to node in a successful configuration.
Okay. As far as using them for emergencies, I think you will find that, I think it's John, KD2AKX, is using VoIP phones for communications in a lot of the public service events. However, you are quite correct that it may be beyond the ability of just a general citizen to basically plug a node into this mesh network. It probably requires a little bit more, but that's probably something that you'd have to talk to John about.
Okay, very good. It certainly is an interesting idea. I've been fascinated by mesh networks. On the West Coast, there's actually significant technological activity going on. They have their own series of mesh networks scattered. The West Coast seems to be much more active, unfortunately, than we are here. If you can just tell by the call signs, they're all the way down to, I think, KV or KZ 6. So they're going to soon run out of the K series. They're licensing so many people. So that's an interesting suggestion. I don't know. I would think, Jim, that the best solution for what you're proposing is if, say, the FCC just decided on a very few frequencies, probably something in near a UHF range where long-range propagation isn't going to be important. And then kind of talk to guys like Baofeng, who can probably tweak their already designed radio on a chip to kind of lock in those subsets of frequencies. You know, everyone in the neighborhood can grab one at a box store for $25, and they're in business. But probably it needs some kind of regulatory agency, or at least someone knocking on the door of the FCC and proposing that.
An interesting perspective on it. But I think the people that need to knock on the door are the people that we're talking to tonight.
Well, maybe. Most of us tend to not really innovate, unfortunately. There's a few very clever people out there who are trying all kinds of new things or trying to reinvent the wheel. There's a group of people unhappy with digital voice modes. They find them proprietary. They all are based on a certain vocoder that the company heavily patents. So I think it's M17 is their code for the new voice mode technology. It uses an open source vocoder and open source packet construction so that anyone can just go out there and build their own. I don't know exactly if amateur radio operators are kind of inclined towards opening up the airwaves for people without a technical bent. I, again, could be wrong with that, but, I think a lot of them, unfortunately, would tend to kind of perceive it as a kind of toy radio that they didn't, having gotten a license, feel that was really up to them. But I could be wrong. Anyone out there want to kind of revolutionize a neighborhood communication system? This is, would be just as good as anything to consider.
WB2KWC?
Yes, Ken.
Okay, you mentioned the FCC. I think the regulation goes beyond the FCC, and there are international agreements that would have to be made as far as use of various forms of frequencies. And I know at one time the international agreement was that there would be no hobby-type communications below, 144 or 150 megahertz. So it's not just the FCC that makes this decision.
Well, yeah, in the wider sense, that's true. But I am sure that there's more than a couple of you wouldn't need that many bands, again, because this is going to be probably a low-power, very, very short-range communications technology. You might even be able to piggyback it onto the on the public frequencies, you know, the 900 megahertz, where a lot of digital wireless phones operate on, or 2.4 where Wi-Fi, or 5 gigahertz where Wi-Fi is. So there's a lot of frequency, especially if you're just kind of maintaining a very local communication environment, you know, that you're not kind of going to amplify this and broadcast it across the state. Okay, I guess we're all talked out. It's a shame. Probably there's more to be said about it, Jim, but at present, I don't know. I think, unfortunately, there's so many different eggs in so many different baskets. There's GMRS, as you mentioned. There's CB. There's a lot of less stringent ways for people to get into short-range communications. So I don't know, and the individual person out there, I don't think, is quite aware of the frailty of their cell phone systems. They kind of expect it to work even in emergencies, and so you're probably not going to have a lot of political force behind you pushing for, you know, either sharing public frequency allocations or offering a small sliver of band allocation that already fits into the international guidelines.
Thank you, Roy. I think you've hit on some of the relevant issues. Appreciate your having a chance to throw it out in the field. 73s and on with the conversation.
Okay, very good, Jim. Thanks for participating, and I'm pretty much sure I will hear from you again sometime tonight. There will be something that you'll be responding to, but we'll see how the future goes. So thank you very much, Jim. Wesley, you're up with your question or your comment for tonight.
It starts from two words, a sponge, like a kitchen sponge, and a tape. Those two things are supposed to make your car not using fuel any longer and driving very, very, very long for very, very long distances. Let me drop. Okay. I assume you remember the old tape recorders. So you inserted the tape in the tape recorder and extract, or better say, release music from it. So with a car, it is a similar story. You insert the tape into the car compartment and you release the hydrogen from the tape so you can drive much longer than with any battery-powered car. Of course, I'm trying to make it look nice. I'm going to be the person who is making it beautiful, and I assume Dr. Roy is going to be the person who is going to say all of the cons of it. regular tape recorder has a magnetic head reading the music from it. With hydrogen tape, you just expose the tape to the light, like a laser light, and extract hydrogen from the tape. Some of you might remember how the CD-ROM was working in the computer. You put a CD on, and then, or Blu-ray, and then the laser beam was actually reading the information from it. So think about the tape that is now 10 times thinner than the human hair, and it's having graphite powder surface coated with porous material body of magnesium hydride MJH2, creating absorbent hydrogen sponge. And that's the sponge that I was talking about. And that sponge can trap the gas at the normal temperature and pressure. Well, I'm not sure about that normal temperature and pressure, but you can hear so many beautiful stories all around. And that's the story of the company called Plasma Kinetics. And they make like light-activated hydrides. It removed the hydrogen from hydride using light. Its system is safe, clean, scalable, and holds more energy than any lithium-ion battery, costing less, and recharged in 5 minutes. How do you like it for your car? Let me go further.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
You got to explain the replaceable, rechargeable. You said rechargeable in 5 minutes. It's not rechargeable in 5 minutes, is my understanding. It's replaceable. The recharging has to be done in a particular building designed for that.
Well, there are three different sources that I've got the information from, and one of them says is rechargeable in 5 minutes. And also, there is another information. The material on the tape absorbs, not adsorbs, absorbs metric tons of hydrogen in minutes. Metric tons of hydrogen in minutes. Hydrogen is released by controlled light at 99.9% of purity. I'm reading it right now from the article. And let me go further.
KC2FFA.
Yes, Charlie. Charlie, did you want to say something?
Yes. I have a question. Am I on the back of the list? Is this the guy before me? Just asking.
Yes, I understand, Charlie. Yes, he was way before you. There were 1, 2, 3, 4 people before you. He was actually the second of the four people. I kind of dropped him down a little bit because I wanted to get in the early questioners who were going to ask questions about amateur radio, but he definitely checked in long before you, Charlie.
Thank you for letting me interrupt. I'm sorry about that. I'm going to let you guys carry on. I'll be on my merry way. I'll check in next week. That's all. No big deal. KC2FFA.
Okay, as you wish, Charlie. We usually take check-ins early around 8 to 5 or 8:10. So that's the easiest way to make sure that you're one of the first few people on the list. But I look forward to talking to you next Sunday with your question. Okay, what's your question?
wondering, is your intention to encourage conversation or to completely stop it? Because I'm not clear.
I would like to encourage the conversation. When I was talking to Dr., he said that I should talk slowly, not rush, so that people don't get lost because of my heavy accent. So my question to you is, could you please specify more accurate what is your suggestion in this area and to make sure you...
No suggestion, just a question. I just wanted to clarify where we're at here.
JC2FFA has one little bit of input here.
Yes, Charlie?
Can't help myself. I was born in Brooklyn. I think Wesley is a very smart man. But he reads a lot. And when he talks to us on the radio, he's reading. And we all, do we all really need to hear that? I don't know. Sometimes it's interesting, sometimes it's not. But that's my opinion. I'm sorry if I offended anybody, but that's how it is. Kilo Charlie 2, Foxtrot, Foxtrot Alpha.
Okay, I do. Comments. I do really need your help in this area. A lengthy explanation. In few words, always reading. Sometimes difficult for me when the question comes in the middle of the text that I memorized, and then I have to interact with that, and the next line that was memorized not related to the question. But anyhow, so I'm talking about a car that is not using gasoline. It's not using battery power. It is using hydrogen that is stored on the tape, like the tape in the tape recorder, and it can drive a lot longer and has better efficiency. The light activated, the plasma kinetics, the company says that the technology is 70% less expensive and 30% lighter than lithium ion batteries, which says that you're going to be paying less for the fuel. Pardon here, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think someone is testing out their transmitter, so they keep pressing in and push to talk, unpush to talk, push to talk. So it got picket fence effect. Also, it got the person who wanted to comment. So hopefully, the guy testing his transmitter can rest it for a little while. The person who wanted to ask Wesley a question or make a comment, please ID yourself. Okay, Jim. We didn't get it because the guy was playing with his push to talk button. But please go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Roy. Wesley. Obviously you have some, technical knowledge above most of us. But I'm questioning what your intention is because I don't know where you're going. So give me a clue.
Okay, I'm trying to tell you about the new approach to fueling your car, or what is the future of the car. We were talking a few weeks ago about batteries and battery charge cars, and then we were talking about hydrogen. And that discussion for the hydrogen actually caught the attention of the people for 1 hour. It happened that instead of ending that subject, I got into something that is advertised as much better. And the patent was filed in 2008. It was banned by Department of Energy and Department of Defense. That was by Advanced Research Projects Division as potential to have a high transformation impact. And it was released only 2017. And now the company has a number of patents, ladies and gentlemen.
So, interesting topic. Good stuff. But the fact of the matter is that fuel lets burn transmit power. Electric doesn't come out of your butt. It comes out of various other technologies that many people don't like. Well, but that's where it comes from. If you shut down all the sources of electric, there's no electric. So what are your comments on that?
You're right. Gas that comes out of your, you know what, that don't count, right? KC2FFA.
Yeah, guys, you know, this is a somewhat informal but somewhat directed net. So if you do have a comment, ID yourself, and then when you're acknowledged, you could make your comment and try to make it polite. I had problems as well, Jim. Hydrogen is an interesting technology. There are multiple engineering problems with it, in my humble opinion. And one that you bring out is that there are no hydrogen trees or hydrogen mines or places where you just see a large bunch of hydrogen hanging out. So it's not similar to fossil fuels or coal, where the chemical bond energy has been built into the structure millions of years ago, and we're just mining and using it. For hydrogen, we're getting it from someplace, and that someplace is very important. If we're getting it from hydroelectric dams, then we're not increasing the carbon footprint. If we're getting it from processing methane, we are. If we're getting it from electrical generators that use fossil fuels, we are. So there are multiple technological problems with hydrogen. I think what Wesley is trying to present tonight is just a possible solution for the carrying of hydrogen, which is a legitimate discussion and one of the many problems that have to be addressed before hydrogen is of any real fundamental benefit for mankind. I think you should kind of not wear rose-colored glasses. These promises are based on public release of marketing releases from a company that's going to make money or not by the value of their technology. A lot of it, I don't know if it's been proven. And if you can recharge it in 5 minutes, I don't know if that means you could recharge a cartridge outside of their factory in 5 minutes. So you also have to kind of piece together some of the specifications they make that are seem to be somewhat isolated in space and time. So, again, I think it's a reasonable topic for discussion. It's one portion of a much larger problem with hydrogen, but it's a legitimate topic for discussion, in my humble opinion.
Agreed. That's why we're here. Go on.
Yeah, sometimes giving examples makes people's attention concentrated on the subject. Let's say if you are a truck driver and you have a truck, with the tape, which is not the tank any longer, not the battery. With that tape, you can save about $27,000 in fuel cost per year. Or you can drive 1,000 miles for $32. Or, according to the company, pitch by loading the containers means they're sort of tape recorder cassettes charged with hydrogen on the single ship. They can safely move 20,000 tons of hydrogen in one trip. In energy terms, that would be enough power for 25,000 homes per year. So we're talking about a completely new approach. We're talking about a guy having a tape recorder, sort of tape recorder, placing his cartridge or cassette inside and driving out. And I was explaining how the process works. The capture, storage, and deliver is done in the same form of cassette. So simply, you go to the gas station, get it charged, or exchange like in old time we did with video cassette Blockbuster. That's all. And to exchange.
Okay, Wesley, I mean, that's the theory, but in practical experience, have they done it with actual vehicles? Or are these engineering calculations based on equations on a chalkboard?
Yes, they did, and I think I have it somewhere. And they were talking about their own truck. Okay, trying to find it. I have everything. I have properties of hydrogen. I have two quotes. Okay, the company, after the ban the technology was released from restriction from Department of Defense. Now they can use the technology, but they can't export that technology for ballistic rocket missiles. That's what I have, but I'm trying to find that part that is about their cars. I mean, the cars that they put it in and they tried. Okay. The source of hydrogen tape is called solid-state hydrogen container. It is much easier and safer to handle than the compressed gas vessel, as there is no need for any pressure. So that's for the company. Now compare it to 700 bars or 10,000 PSI hydrogen tank with Toyota Bria. Oh, in company trucks, they would say $27,000 per fuel cost per year. That was it. That's because the cost of solid-state hydrogen per kilowatt hour is 50% lower than compressed hydrogen. So what is going on right now. To make it a little bit easier for some people to understand.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
The way that you're reading that blurb, it does not sound like this is a practical experiment with a result. This sounds like a guy sitting with a calculator doing some calculations and coming up with these interesting numbers. I don't see any indication that they said that they had 12 trucks on the road and that's what they got. They're kind of phrasing it as a equivalency, you know, based upon the hydrogen use and ability of vehicles already running hydrogen. If you plug in their engineer's number, that's what you get as results. That's quite different than they have a big bunch of trucks going crisscross around the United States and supplying them with all of these bits of information.
I think, Dr. Roy, that they are not there yet. You might be right. They simply took the calculator, made the calculation, put it on paper for us to read it. There is another quote. Swapping containers takes 5 minutes. Recharging of containers takes 5 to 30 minutes. Depends from the capacity of container. There will be the capacity of the tape. So 5 minutes to 30 minutes. Vehicle or aircraft, because it could also power aircraft, can be hot swappable with engine shut off, without engine shut off, to allow more time on the road or in the air. Interesting.
Yeah, notice that a lot of these are what ifs. They're not, we tried it and it works. So they're possibilities. Again, they show promise. Would I invest my life savings based on promises? Again, we've talked before, there's a lot of technological companies with a lot of interesting ideas, with a lot of interesting equations that never pan out because there's inevitably engineering roadblocks. Some of them can be surmounted, some of them cannot be surmounted, and you never know until you actually apply this technology in real life and you see what it's capable of. I don't think they really document the energy release of the cartridges. At what rate does it release energy? How big a cartridge would be to power a jet engine? How much the weight of a cartridge like that would be? You know, there's a lot of interesting engineering problems that don't sound like they were either addressed or that they would like to share with anyone, which probably is a little bit more scary. So, again, I think it's interesting. I think it's promising. I wouldn't invest a dime in it yet. I could read you 15,000 stories about the magic of graphene. It's going to do everything. You know, it's probably going to give you let you paint on the wall once in your entire lifetime, and dirt will just fall off of it because of the miracle of graphene. But we haven't seen a single real graphene product. Technology is wonderful. Technology is great. I love reading about it. I love learning about it. But you got to kind of have a slightly jaundiced eye sometimes because everything doesn't pan out.
Absolutely agree. But if I was to defend the concept, I would say they didn't have enough time from 2009 to do anything that is needed for the technology to be sound in year 2021, but they had a ban on it. So I'm trying to play devil advocate right now. So only in 2017 they were able to apply for patent in Canada, Japan, and Korea. They've got the patents. And multiple countries around the world. They also introduced the light-activated energy storage to the United States Department of Energy again. So the U.S. Department of Energy in 2009 put a ban on it, but then in 2017, they actually by themselves applied for the Department of Energy to look at their previous code that they put in the ban. Says the potential have a high transformational impact. So they ask, actually, if it has high transformational impact, why then you don't do something on it that would make it work? And as far as I know, they work with Department of Defense as well. The puzzling factor here is that Department of Defense uses any possible sources they want. They have access to any possible scientist or team. And if it was not worth the effort, why would they do it? And to Xia.
I'm sorry, that might have been Charlie, but you were mostly noise. I'll give you another chance in 1 second. A lot of times the Defense Department gets things wrong or they're overly cautious. Our beloved Defense Department put money into people staring at goats, trying to walk through walls, doing ESP, doing mind control. Sometimes the guys in charge of the budget go a little wonky. I'm not saying that that's the case with these guys, but just because there's an interest does not mean there is a definitive thing there. It's just an interest. Again, it's promising. So I could understand where the Defense Department could look at that and say, gee, that's promising. I think people should look into it. Not, I think I'm going to give my entire life savings to these people and let them run with it.
I agree, but most of the technological, technologically advanced toys that we use came from Department of Defense. It was released by Department of Defense to the public and to Exxia.
Yes, Wesley. A lot of things, including the Internet. The Internet started as a little toy that the Defense Department was playing with. So, yes. But we don't get to see the 10,000 projects that were wasted money that never came to any fruition whatsoever. So, again, it's the same as patents. Just because you get a patent does not mean it's a credible technology. It means you qualified for a patent, which doesn't require a credible technology. If you get the interest of the Defense Department, it means that they see something that may be of value, but not necessarily of value. You know, they don't have to account for every dime. The defense budget is very opaque. So they like to spend a lot of our money on a lot of things. And sometimes they get it right, and it revolutionizes technology, as the Internet certainly. If you're looking for something that was a technological disruptor, a paradigm shift, and 15 other cliches, the Internet is a gleaming example, and DARPANET was where it was born. So, you know, I agree with you on that concept, but you can't just take that and generalize it. You also kind of do that with the radar, with microwave ovens, that the cost of microwave ovens plummeted. That is true. But you cannot say that every technology has plummeted by the same factor, because historically it hasn't.
I agree with that, Dr. Roy. So we have a technology that is potentially good for airplanes, drones, trucks, trains, ships, buses, and large-scale vehicles, and it gives better performance than any other known to humanity form of fuel storage. In per volume. So let me go to a Tesla battery is 265 watt hour per kilogram. Hydrogen in tank is 530 watt hour per kilogram, but is at the pressure of 700 bars. And solid state hydrogen by the company, what is the Plasma Kinetics, is 380 watt hour per kilogram. So we say that 380 watt hour per kilogram compared to the volume that the tape is taking is the best known to humanity form of energy storage. And to Exxia.
Well, Wesley, once again, that's the theoretical storage. The practical storage in practical experience is yet to be known. They have to actually do it in real life and see what the real numbers are. That's probably the numbers that they quote are the optimum numbers based on the best possible situation. We don't know how the technology. Basically, what this technology amounts to is hydrogen has a high energy density than a lot of other materials, and people like the idea that when you get the energy out of hydrogen, you basically reduce it into water, which has no carbon imprint and is benign. That's a given. The problem that you have, though, is the nature of, aside from producing the hydrogen, is of storing the hydrogen. The theory behind this is rather than pressurize it with very heavy insulated tanks that can explode possibly, you want to somehow adhere it to another material as a hydride and put it into a kind of semi-solid state so that the hydrogen density can be maintained at a high point while still having a one atmosphere of pressure. The way that they've decided to try and do this is with a technology called laser-activated metal hydride. You expose a metallic graphene and other materials to a hydrogen gas environment. The hydrogen is absorbed and turns into a hydride. You can release the hydride by exposing it to a certain frequency and a certain intensity of laser light that releases the hydrogen. You collect it, you burn it, and you use it for whatever thing that you want to do with it. Again, interesting technology. They had to use the concept of a cylinder with a tape